Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course. That's the name of the show. The other name is Off Topic.
But this is football.
What you want, we've got, and it might be hard to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know, we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you rant about this podcast too. Just a site where Jeremy analyzes some matches and kiss the grin the bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Aston, they're calling out our name. Where will you? You listen to this podcast too.
Welcome to the latest Mountain West Connection podcast. Our website, as everyone should know, mwcconnection.com. Chugging along through the Western Division, talking Fresno State. You can Twitter handle if you want to follow us there for randomness. MWC Connection, Facebook, where our goal is still 3,000 by opening week at Mountain West Connection. So, Jeremy Moss, got Matt Kennerly, and Chris Andres, who's chomping on some popcorn.
Mm-hmm. Getting ready to watch Mountain West football.
What popcorn? Is it Orville Redenbacher?
It is not. It is Act 2.
What? Any flavor?
Butter Lovers.
Good choice. Not a huge popcorn guy, but you got to go. I just go butter. Keep it simple.
Yeah, or at least salted.
Yeah, at least salted. Like, I don't get caramel. I don't get kettle corn. I think kettle corn's just terrible. Anybody agree? Disagree?
Disagree.
Is this the ham debate all over again?
It might be. I mean, you were wrong about that, too.
Already? I still debate there's no such thing as good ham, but that's neither here nor there, I guess, for me. What I'll say about kettle corn or flavored popcorn, I'll probably have a handful and leave it at that.
That's fair. Okay. Maybe it's not your favorite thing in the world, but it's something that you'll eat if it's there.
Like, I've tried, like, I know we're way off topic. We will get to football eventually, but, like, if you go to 7-Eleven or whatever convenience store is in your area, you got the AMPM, Maverick, or whatever is out here everywhere, but they're like, oh, there's jalapeno-flavored popcorn, there's barbecue, blue cheese. Comes in a pretty big bag. It's not very much. I'll eat about half of them. I'm like, it's good, but it's not something you want to go with. But let's go to football. I don't think people care for our gourmet taste, right?
Yeah.
Yeah? As you're chopping down popcorn. All right, so this is Matt's team, Fresno State. Is it still okay to call it your team?
It is okay.
Okay, because 3-9 last year was kind of in your wheelhouse for what you thought would happen.
Yeah, I think I was in the minority and sadly, I was vindicated.
Sadly, yeah. So, how about we start with you? Do you want to start at the top of the coaching with Tim Drueter keeping his job basically because they owe him a lot of money, so they get rid of Dave Schramm and pretty much everybody else and reassign coaches?
Well, I mean, I think what's easy to lose is that, you know, it's easy to be reactionary when basically your entire offense falls apart, your defense can't keep up. But, you know, what you're seeing on campus is a greater investment in, like, the athletic programs as a whole. You know, it doesn't have much to do with the football team specifically, but, you know, they invested in bringing men's wrestling back, which is a big deal around here. They've invested heavily in improving the facilities. I was at an event last night, and you know, some of the people in attendance made a big deal about the fact that they have a training table now, which they didn't have before.
That is a huge deal.
Yeah, and I mean, they, you know, and they have the deal for unis with Nike and all that kind of stuff. They brought in Jim Bartko from Oregon, who's been around that kind of thing. They have a new scoreboard at the north end of the end zone. So there's all these kind of off-field and, you know, on-field improvements that are happening to kind of raise the profile of the program as a whole. And if you consider that they've only had three head coaches since like 1980 when Bulldog Stadium opened, this is an administration that in the past has had tremendous amounts of patience, not only with, you know, Pat Hill, but, you know, every time Jim Sweeney had a down period or, you know, a 500 season, you know, they were never calling for his head, so far as I can remember, and he almost always came back. So I think I'm in the minority here, too. A lot of people talk about DeRuiter being on the hot seat, and, you know, while I can't totally dismiss that prospect, what I think is that they just can't look as bad as they did last year. If they can at least look competitive with all the young guys that are going to be stepping into very important positions, that is what I think is most important to me.
That makes sense, because as we joke with the quarterback, it's what we, Chris, I, and you, we all kind of joke with it. It's a big deal when you're rotating quarterbacks due to all these injuries they had. And, like, part of it is what people said about Dave Schramm, kind of his coaching style. Like, if you read what Gazette Greenlee said the other day, who's now at UTEP, basically, he didn't say it, but he kind of said, I'm going to all this stuff to say a new place, first start. But there's been rumors that people have said, and kind of you hear some stuff, that he wasn't the best confidence builder for a quarterback for Dave Schramm. And that hurts everybody when you're rotating guys in and out, you're hurt, or whatever it may be. I guess his coaching style off the field wasn't the conducive for success to put it all together for play calling, coaching, your mechanics, to psychological stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, people who have had their ear to the ground around here, you know, especially later in the year when the losing kind of wore on, you know, players and staff, you heard a lot of talk about the fact that there wasn't even a lot of communication among coaches. So, you know, something had to give, and it did. And, you know, speaking personally, I like the moves that they made on both offense and defense in kind of retooling the staff.
So let me ask you, Chris. They bring in Lorenzo Ward, who was from South Carolina. Does it make
Lorenzo Ward or Eric Kisaw?
Lorenzo Ward. Oh, they're both from South Carolina?
No, but Kisaw's on offense. You're starting with defense, right?
I was going coaches, not necessarily the players. I'm jumping around, I guess. I don't know. Since I mentioned Ward, we'll go with Ward. Does it matter that he comes from the SEC? Does that, even though the Gamecock defense wasn't very good, that's a pretty big change, right? Coming from that part of the country to, like, just a change overall is a pretty big deal, I think.
I think on one hand, you could say, oh, they're coming from the SEC, they're coming to Fresno State, this is going to be good again and all that. But I think, on the other hand, you have to be realistic. Okay, why would he come from South Carolina all the way to Fresno State? What is the draw to Fresno? As opposed to maybe somewhere else in the SEC picking him up, or even having a chance at a head coaching opportunity. But you have to kind of wonder about that. Now, if this is just a fit purpose, you're absolutely right. South Carolina wasn't great at defense over the last year, or even the last couple years. They were one or two stellar players on the defensive line.
Jadeveon Clowney's pretty good. That helps out pretty well.
Like I said, still, despite one or two players on the defensive line. But now if Lorenzo Ward comes over to Fresno State and he can find himself, you're not going to find yourself in Jadeveon Clowney, but what you can find yourself is maybe Kyle Hendrickson, who's only a sophomore, and develop him into the Mountain West version of a Jadeveon Clowney. Then you're talking about development of individual players who really anchor that defense, provide leadership, and really
provide some chaos around the cup.
It could be. Like, he sent 12 players to the NFL. So that's a pretty big deal. Like I said, having Clowney, any...
Well, let me ask you this. Did he send 12 players to the NFL because they are SEC or because he's a good coach and knows how to develop his players?
I would say it has to be some of both. Clowney was the number one overall pick by far, or out of high school. Five-star DN, gigantic kid. And then they've had guys like Melvin Ingram and a couple other guys. It has to be a combo of both. Look, if you look at Jimmy Clausen, goes to Notre Dame, top QB, off the charts, he's doing nothing. You know what I mean? He's barely in the NFL. If you go to a high-profile school, there's that. But you also have to coach to some degree. But also, it's at South Carolina. Even with Steve Spurrier there, they were never great during his tenure. So it's not like
they didn't have to be.
I'm just saying they weren't winning titles to make it even bringing in better players where you can maybe not have the best coach but have a good recruiter to get players there, and they're already developed well enough. You just do just enough strength or whatever, conditioning, that type of stuff to get them on the field. In South Carolina, you're in SEC, but you still have to – if you're going to be a good team, you're still not getting the best of the best every year. So I'd say it's a combo of both.
No, but you're not Vanderbilt either.
True, yes. True, but you're also not Alabama.
I just say it's both. Well, yeah, I mean, one thing that we haven't talked a lot about in these preview podcasts, but he had a history as kind of an ace recruiter too. You know, if you look at guys like Mike Davis and Bryson Allen Williams, guys who are playing big roles for the Gamecocks these days, you know, those are guys that were, you know, Lorenzo Ward was the guy who was primarily responsible for bringing them in. And, you know, when he came to Fresno State, he came as kind of a late hire, but he stepped in and he's already gone back to Georgia and Florida and made a lot of offers to a lot of athletes down in the Southeast. And in that way, he's kind of opening up a new avenue for recruiting, which is interesting. You know, and the other thing is that, you know, the defense that he ran at South Carolina and a lot of what he spoke about when I heard him speak yesterday, you know, his defense is all about continuity. And for a team in the position that Fresno State's in, I think that that is really important.
Yeah, it has to be. And that's, yeah, it seems odd you would go back to the East Coast when you're in California, so many players, but it's kind of like with a Colorado State Mike Bobo, he brought in the quarterback from Georgia. If you can open up, even if you get, like, Fresno should stick in California for the most part because it's cheaper, there's plenty of talent there, but if you can go to some area or county or high school that's really good and get a couple players every year, like I said, that's a pretty big deal. I just don't know. I think part of the reason he's not there and at Fresno now because Will Muschamp's now there, the head coach of South Carolina. I believe that was part of the reason he wasn't retained. Muschamp will do his own thing for defense, and why do I need this guy and I can do my own thing? And he was kind of going downward a little bit. Not saying a bad hire, but this wasn't him looking. It's more of him looking for a job to find a place than a promotion, or it's just. You think it's a weird fit, but it's not, because odds of him staying, he wasn't going to stay at South Carolina, so he took a job he could get.
I feel like I disagree with that sentiment, but I don't know why.
And see, I think for a team in Fresno State's position, landing that kind of hire with that kind of track record is a huge deal.
No, I agree. I'm just saying for him leaving wasn't necessarily, I'm going to Fresno because it's a better opportunity. He was looking for an opportunity, and I still think it is a big deal. He coached in that conference and everything had done pretty well. I agree with you, Sam. I'm just saying the way he left, like him being retained, probably wasn't going to happen, but it's still a big deal. I think I made the comment months ago when we wrote about this, you or me or whomever, that still getting a coach from that conference is still a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
All right, so... we start with defense. We just go defensive stuff since we're going backwards, I guess, tonight.
Yeah, let's do that.
So, defensively, oh, man. It wasn't very good last year. Is that safe to say? Is that the polite answer?
That is the polite answer, yes. They were not very good. trying to stop the run. You know, the offense didn't do them any favors. They didn't rank very highly in terms of time of possession, and that had a huge influence on, you know, the defense having to stay on the field, having to give up a lot of third downs. I'm trying to look up this opponent's third down conversion rate real quick. Let me see if you can guess where they ranked last year. They were dead last in the conference last year. They gave up 46% on third down. Ooh. That's the kind of figure that's going to, you know, that causes trouble, and it did. Things tended to snowball when they fell behind. You know, if you look at the kind of just game-by-game summaries, you know, they lost like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games by 4 touchdowns last year. You know, that's the kind of thing. I mean, Nick Toth, you know, I like what he did. You know, I don't think it was entirely his fault. And I'm glad he stuck around. He's still here coaching inside linebackers. But, you know, they're going to be running the same kind of aggressive offense. And really, it's about finding guys who are going to step up, you know.
That is true. Like, looking at the players they lost, like, they've lost some decent amount of talent. Like, especially with the linebacker spot. Like, Jaro Ederon, I probably butchered it, but him, Kyrie Wilson, those are two. That's 130 tackles or so right there. That's 20 tackles for loss, essentially. 9 sacks. Basically, it's Ederon is the key player they lose, and so, and he also is your two top defensive linemen. I don't know who's going to step up. They have, like, the recruiting, they have, like, Austin Vamilli, a 3-star guy. They have Patrick Baloney. They could step up, but they didn't play last year. Or it's hard to tell what they'll do. They bring in some talent, but we, like, okay, what do you got? That we won't know until a couple weeks in who these guys are.
Well, and that, you also talk about, okay, on the defensive line, you lose Todd Hunt and Claudell Lewis, both within the mid-30s in tackles. But those were guys, if they're significant on the defensive line and they're only providing mid-30s with your tackles, that's not getting it done on the line. So you bring now your next starting four who combined had about 40 tackles between all of them. That's going to get you into some trouble. So they have to step up, and they have to be able to go in and maybe move more of a rotation around. But you have to get pressure.
This might be like Nevada last week, or yeah, last time we talked about Nevada, where, like, I think Matt brought this up, like, how's their depth going to be, because they lost their whole defensive front essentially. And, like, if you look at the numbers of who's coming back, there's only six players who played last year on the defensive line. Everybody else I mentioned have never played.
Fresno State didn't lose their whole defensive front.
Well, I mean, I'm saying the guys at depth-wise, I would say.
They still have Nathan Madsen there in the middle at nose guard. It's the guys who are going to flank him who are going to be really important for helping this team kind of rebound, especially trying to defend the run. You know, a guy like Kyle Hendrickson is a guy that I think the coaching staff has a lot of expectations for. Mason Bradley is another guy that could pitch in. You know, I don't think you're looking for one guy to replace the production that you're losing with Hunt and Lewis. You're probably going to look for it in like 3 or 4 guys and have a rotation that you can keep a lot of these guys fresh, because, you know, if you're looking at their height and their weight, this isn't you know, a defensive line that's meant to kind of swallow the interior of an offensive line. There's, you know, only one or two guys that are more than 300 pounds. This is a quick defensive line that's, you know, it's going to attack, and it's going to try to, you know, keep things occupied so that the linebackers behind them can make plays.
Yeah, when one of your nose guards is 6'1", 270, you're not going to be the eating up the center and guard on either side on offense.
To me, I mean, to the bigger questions are who's going to step up at linebackers. Just like you said, they lose Ederine, they lose Kyrie Wilson. You know, that's their best inside linebacker and their best outside linebacker. But, I mean, personally, there's a lot of talent that I like in this unit. You know, and you saw flashes of these guys, you know, in the last year or two. You know, Tobeno Keke has had, you know, spurts where he was a really dynamic pass rusher in the last couple of years. James Bailey had a couple moments last year. Yeah, I think they expect Nella Otukolo to step up. He was a really big recruit that they flipped from UNLV, if I'm not mistaken. I know that he was a three-star guy in some scouting platforms. So I don't think they're going to lack for depth at linebacker. It's just a matter of, you know, is there going to be one guy that steps up to, you know, challenge double-digit sacks, or is it going to be a bunch of guys getting three or four sacks? But there's a lot to like here, if you're asking me.
There is, yeah. If you look at how many players played last year, and the guys I mentioned, or not mentioned, but like, if you look who never played, like, their incoming guys didn't play last year, they have a couple three-star guys coming in. We see, I don't know, I don't do research on all these guys, but the rate is that high, they should come in and do something. But if you look at, they've had, four players played in more than 10 games last year. Everybody's coming back, played at least 8 games, so... Like you said, Matt's right. It's gonna like, is there gonna be one guy to get 15 sacks or 10 sacks or double digit TFLs? I think for their with the way Lorenzo does his defense, it's attacking. I think it's gonna be multiple players who come up big, not necessarily. Well, I'm not big like 10 plus TFLs, but you have all these guys with 5 to 9, where offensive line can't focus on him. If he can bring that same attacking style, then there's going to be, it's not, I doubt it'd be one player. Partly because Fresno, A, probably doesn't have the one player. Maybe Bailey could do it, but I think there'll be multiple players who are successful if Ford can get what he wants done, implemented this season. And then if these new guys can come in and play who are regarded highly, even better depth, and maybe that'll help the defensive line. Maybe if there's, put a guy at the end if they need to, if something's going wrong for all the depth they have at linebacker.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned Bailey, but one other guy that I think is worth keeping your eye on is the, you know, he might be, you know, if he puts a little bit of weight on, he could be a scary physical pass rusher, and that's Justin Green. You know, he's the biggest linebacker at 6'4". You know, he was kind of a 2 or 3 star guy coming in. And even last year in limited playing time, he only played 10 games, but he did have 3 sacks, did have, you know, 4 tackles for loss, excuse me, did force a fumble. You know, if he can step up in fall camp and seize a starting role, I think that that's a guy that could have an impact.
And we'll see. And then if you go to the secondary really quick, they have some players back, even though they lose both their safeties. They have enough guys. Like, part of it is, I think teams like they passed against this team a lot last year. And, like, Tyquan Glass, if that's correct, I'm saying it. Like, all the PBUs they have, pass breakups, interceptions, the secondary. Well, I guess it's mostly Glass with his 4 last year. But if you look at their statistics, kind of their tackles, their breakups, forced fumbles, they're an aggressive unit. They just need to find who's going to be the safeties, essentially. Because they have, same with the linebacker core, they bring back a plethora of players who saw significant time last year.
But they're an aggressive unit only in the sense that the cornerbacks were the aggressive unit. If you look at losing Shannon Edwards and Charles Washington, it wasn't that big of a loss. So the question it becomes, are you replacing like for like? Is Daylon Jones and Stratton Brown going to act as those free safeties and strong safeties exactly how Shannon Edwards and Charles Washington were doing, where Tyquan Glass and Jamal Ellis are still being pretty much the ball hawks of the team, and the other two guys are just kind of, yeah, they're aggressive, but nothing's really happening. They're just mostly playing catch-up and dragging them down. Or is somebody like Deshaun Potts going to come in and become more aggressive, not in terms of tackles, but in terms of becoming those interceptions? Can he match 4 interceptions like Tyquan Glass? You know, can this whole secondary unit become something to fear so that all teams in the Western Division and the rest of the schedule have to rely on the run and become one-dimensional? Which, I mean, for teams like San Diego State, that's not a problem, but making it only one-dimensional where, okay, finally Donnell Pumphrey's gas, so you have to rely on Christian Chapman, but guess what? He's getting picked off twice or three times a game. That's going to make an impact.
They need more interceptions. They only had 9 last year. They were better than, what, Hawaii and CSU and a couple teams, but that's a big deal, yards per game, but also depends the way they're playing as well. Like, if they're – it depends on the schedule. Like, we can't predict they're going to give up 200 yards per game in the air, 150 yards, do something drastic where they gave up 211, which it's not the best, but it depends on if they're losing by a lot, which could happen in some games this year. We don't – secondary means nothing, because if they're just running, like when they play San Diego State or – Nevada with James Butler running the ball, we may not know, but it seems like when the opportunities are there from last year, they did okay, I would say, overall. They didn't have it spread around, so if, like, when you look at kind of the interceptions from last year, like with Glass, are they going to target toward him who had 4 interceptions, 6 pass breakups, or the guy who never gets a pass breakup, are they going to target him instead? So it's, they have the depth to be fine, but it's hard to predict. Well, they'll be great, but it really, like you said, if the offense isn't very good, or if they're playing teams that are just running instead of passing because they're winning so much, they have enough talent. I don't think this is too big of a concern, this unit, I would say.
The only thing that I would say to kind of counter that, I think, is I think the strengths of the way that the secondary is shaping up are going to be different than what they were last year. You know, I don't think at the safety position they have a guy like a Darren Smith in the past, who is like a true ball hawk, you know, because Dalen Jones, if you recall, he's had a couple of instances where he's announced himself as a big hitter from the safety position. Like, I don't know if either of you remember the 2013 championship game where he basically concussed Daryl Gerritsen and forced a fumble and all that. Like, I mean, he's a thumper from the safety position. You know, he's a guy that I think could be a huge asset on, you know, stepping up to defend against the run, you know, stepping up to blitz from the secondary, which I don't think Lorenzo Ward is going to be shy about doing. To me, it's about whether, you know, the pass rush is, you know, if the pass rush falls off, the secondary could have a hard time, because I think last year they finished kind of middle of the pack as far as sacks and, you know, quarterback pressures and things like that. But if that number regresses at all, the guys on the outside aren't going to be able to cover forever. And even last year, they had a problem with, you know, even just tackling. If you look at kind of the big plays that they gave up through the air last year, they were kind of middle of the pack as far as giving up 10-yard passing plays. But, you know, as you up the number, they finished worse and worse. They had 37 plays of 20 yards. They had 18 plays of 30 yards, 11 of 40 yards, and so on. And at least of what I've seen, you know, obviously the defense was ahead of the offense in the scrimmage that I saw earlier this spring. But they were doing a much better job of tackling all around. You know, Chris mentioned Deshaun Potts as a guy who could be a factor. I agree with that. You know, Tank Kelly is another guy that I think a lot of fans around here have expectations for.
Boy, his name is Tank. It has to be.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, again, this isn't a secondary that's going to be static. There's going to be like 7 or 8 guys, especially when you get into, you know, teams that they're going to face that are going to be throwing 3, 4, 5 receivers out against them. So it's not going to be one guy probably putting up those big interception numbers. It's just, you know, the numbers at the end of the year might not be, you know, sexy or stand out or anything like that. But I think there's a lot of potential for the secondary to be really good with the athletes that they have.
That's very true. But also, if you look at the West, who scares you throwing the ball against them or their schedule overall? Like, outside of maybe San Jose State and Colorado State, Utah State, Kent Myers, and then we'll see. But Aztecs may not be an elite throwing team. Nevada, we maybe them, but UNLV, I don't know. Toledo, they have new players there, a new quarterback. Hawaii, I don't see Air Force. I'm not dissing the secondary, but it may not be. It could be what I'm trying to get at. it could be just an okay unit and not have to worry too much because who they're playing, there's not any great quarterbacks on their schedule. Even Nebraska, it's like, okay, whatever. They're Nebraska, but how good is their quarterback?
The only caveat I would say is that I'm pretty sure I said the same thing last year. And there were some instances where they really struggled. You know, they gave up 12 yards per attempt against Nevada. They gave up, you know, 10.5 against Utah State. They even gave up 11.5 against Air Force. And Air Force is a team that runs the football down your throat. So there's a lot of promise, but
I'm being so negative. Come on, I'm trying to help you out here.
I'm just saying there's not any guarantees. I mean, you have a point. True. Mm-hmm. But the same point was true last year as well, and they weren't very good.
All right, let's go to offense. Also featuring a new coordinator, Eric, we said it before, Kiasu, is that correct?
Kiasu,
that would make sense. Kiasu. So this was an interesting hire. He came from Alabama where he was he the passing coach or something, essentially?
His official title was football analyst.
Jeez.
He was like one of like 7 or 8 because that's what SEC teams do.
Yeah, with the new rule, you could have as many coaches or something on staff a couple years ago. Well, we have money. We're Alabama. Let's hire a guy who's been an OC when he's or wide receiver coach before and be an analyst. Like he was OC at Kansas. It's like, well, it's Kansas, but he's also at Washington, also at Cal. Colorado, like with Jeff Tedford, guys like that. And I like Bill Connolly's little blurb about him. He's that guy, like the actor, you know his face but never know his name, but he's always associated with pretty good things. That's basically who this guy is. Something like that. So, Matt, did we ever figure out exactly what he did? I think you talked with the guys from the Alabama website. Do you recall what they provided you?
Without having the article in front of me, I do not.
Okay.
If you guys want to talk for a minute, I could look it up.
Yeah, we can do that. So, like, he came over. Okay, he's with Alabama, so he learned from Nick Saban. Also, Lane Kiffin. Chris, you can laugh if you want about Lane Kiffin. But his offense did fine with the Crimson Tide. He's part of the offense that's done pretty well. If he does anything close to what he did at Alabama, we know what it is. Pro set, run the ball. Kiffin opened up a little bit for the passing game. And he was at Kansas. So if you're an OC at a big-time conference school and with Washington, he's been coached by – if you look at who's coached him or who staff's been part of, Chris, that gives me a lot of confidence he can bring good things being associated with Cal – and Colorado during their better years, and Washington as well. So,
oh, absolutely.
Okay, so to answer the previous question, I got this answer from Eric Evans over at Roll Bama Roll, our Alabama blog. But he said that Kiasu was largely tasked with identifying tendencies in opposing defenses, primarily with passing downs. And that had a way of helping the scout team prepare for what opponents would throw at them from week to week.
Okay. So basically what you're saying is he's helps avoid the quarterback.
Yeah, more or less.
I would hope so. And here's some guy, like here, he's a pretty good receiver coach, but like here's who he's coached before. Like we mentioned, schools like DeSean Jackson, Jeff McCarver, Keenan Allen. So he's coached some pretty good NFL talent receivers for various stops. So, do you recall, Matt, what he kind of – I know the spring game's kind of not meaningless, but it's hard to take from it. Do you recall kind of what he was doing during that game a couple months ago?
Well, I mean, it was actually the very, very first scrimmage, so it wasn't the showcase. But what was interesting is that he was throwing out some looks that personally, I didn't expect to see, you know, them to be lining up with, you know, two tight ends and Chase and Virgil under center.
That's Alabama football for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that we hadn't seen since Pat Hill was in town, you know what I mean? But it looked, you know, a lot of the looks were mostly the same. You know, he's a spread guy. That's what he ran at Washington. That's what he ran at, you know, during his time at Kansas. You know, so if what you saw on the field last year is going to be largely the same, you know, three receivers, four receivers kind of spread out, and, you know, quick decision making is something that he talked a lot about yesterday at the event that I was at. You know, if you can get the ball out, the coaching staff is going to be happy. If you can make quick decisions, good decisions, that's what makes the offense go.
All right, so let's get to the actual offensive players. So part of having a new coaching staff is what's going to happen. It gives them advantage early in the year, especially even Nebraska. That'll give them a little bit of a surprise early on. But we joke about the quarterback and playing a million QBs with what Dave Schramm was quick with the hook. But it was mostly injuries last year. You got Zach Greenlee transferring, Kellen Anderson hurt, Chasen Virgil hurt, Ford Childress hurt. Is it I assume it's Chasen Virgil the guy? I know we don't know, but I think like he got to start, I think, what, versus Utah? And then he was a spleen injury, I want to say. And I assume from what we've been hearing a little bit and what they thought of last year, he's going to be the quarterback.
Actually, Virgil had the broken clavicle. It was Ford Childress who had the ruptured spleen.
I can't keep all the injuries intact, but thank you.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're asking me, yeah, I think he's probably the guy. You know, he got a lot of the reps in the scrimmage that I went to. He got the most reps under center in, you know, the spring showcase, you know, and, you know, while they're obviously still in the process of kind of learning all of the new wrinkles that Kiesau's bringing, you know, to me, I mean, if you look at the three quarterbacks in competition with one another, you've got basically three different quarterbacks. You know, Childress is the guy who's kind of the prototypical gunslinger. He's the biggest quarterback, the sturdiest quarterback. He's the quarterback that probably has the most pedigree. But he hasn't had a lot of real game experience with this offense. And now he's having to kind of learn a new variation of the spread offense. And, you know, you look at Kelton Anderson, who had a couple of different opportunities to really seize the starting job last year and just couldn't do it. He was kind of a scattershot passer. He was, you know, a fairly effective runner, but he, you know, he was never the threat that they needed him to be throwing the football. And then Virgil's the guy that I think, you know, he's the young guy. He's kind of the highly heralded prospect from Texas. And to me, I think you saw flashes of the quarterback that he could be in the couple of games that he did play last year. You know, I went back and I looked over that Utah game, and, you know, he had a lot of mobility. He was making plays. He was making good decisions, even just throwing the ball away instead of trying to force things down the field. And I think that's kind of what you need with a young offense that's growing around him. You know,
yeah,
he's
only
got
sacked
the most mobility.
One time last year.
Yeah, I think his ceiling among the three quarterbacks that are there is the highest. And I think the coaches know that, even if they aren't going to tell you one way or the other that he's going to be the quarterback probably until September.
All right, so if we're deciding now, Chris, who's starting quarterback versus Nebraska? Same, Matt, you agree? Same thing probably?
If I were putting money on it, I would definitely say Virgil.
All right, we'll go Virgil. We'll see. It's... my main goal, I think everybody in Fresno wants it to be one quarterback. If he struggles, leave it at one quarterback unless it gets completely off the rails. I think that's...
Wait, you don't want the quarterback?
No, that's the... By
no.
saying the baseline...
No, Chris, we don't.
Well, we better sell some shirts real quick before that happens. But I think if you're saying the baseline is to keep one quarterback... It can't be worse in the past couple years. So, I know injuries are part of it, but even before that, they were yo-yoing to the extreme the past couple years. All right, let's move on to running back. So, I would say the one player that was pretty only the best player and offensive weapon was Martez Waller. So, Matt, what's about with DeJounte O'Neal? Is he, I assume he'll be the guy despite his... lack of carries last year?
I mean, maybe it sounds like a cop-out, but I think they're probably going to go with the... Well, no, I think they're probably going to go with the committee of backs. I don't know that they have one guy that they've identified as kind of the lead back. But, I mean, even when they were really successful as an offense back in 2012 and 2013, it was never just Martez Waller. It was Waller and Josh Quezada. Mm-hmm. And right now, I think that there are three guys who could possibly play significant roles, or maybe four guys, depending on how things shake out. You know, Deontay O'Neal, he's small, he's fast. You know, if the lazy comparison is that he's kind of Darren Sproles-like. And, you know, he showed some shiftiness, which could have its uses, you know, running outside and, you know, hiding behind, you know, his blockers and springing for big plays. He had a couple of them in the spring scrimmage, I believe. You know, the other guy that I think a lot of people are excited to see once he gets healthy is Bryson Oglesby. You know, he came over from Texas. He didn't play last year. He redshirted. He hurt his knee in that first scrimmage that I went to, but you know, he had a lot of surprising power, which I think is something that could be useful. And Dontell James, I think, is the other guy that a lot of people have expectations for. So really, I don't think it's one guy. I think that they could go with a three-headed attack and probably be just fine.
Yeah, that's probably the right answer. I was looking at Oglesby as well, three-star guy from Sugar Land. Offers were okay, Houston, Illinois, Indiana, but they need a size. Like Chris agrees with me, you don't want a guy who's all these 5'7", 170 guys. He's not huge, but 6 foot 190. Or could it be Dontell James? He's almost 220. You got to have a big guy at some point.
Yeah, and I think Dontell James will probably be primary backup back, but he might be. Matt answered me this question real quick. Was he ever competing for the starting job?
As far as I think there might have been. I don't remember if it was him or someone else. I think he had some academic issues at some point. I don't remember seeing him on the field for the scrimmage, but I fully expect him to be a factor once the fall rolls around.
So, but that being said, you want a big back as your number two or your number one, and small speedy as your number two. At least in my opinion, that's how a good ideal running back system works. The key is here, and you guys hit the nail on the head. Absolutely, who's going to step up and who's going to go, or, you know, assuming that Chase and Virgil gets the starting job, could we see Kilton Anderson in more of like a split back scenario as a backup running back rather than a quarterback?
Or compound deck, maybe?
No. I mean, I think what you're more likely to see is more of an emphasis on zone read actions. You know, because you have a guy like Virgil who can run, who is smart, he can read a front seven, recognize a blitz, and, you know, even if a play breaks down, he can still make something of it.
Makes sense. Here's really quick with Dontell James. He left the program abruptly in 2014 for personal reasons, so that's why he was not around last year, but now he's back. So I don't recall what those were, but that's why he saw nothing last year, so we'll see.
My thing is between the running back and the wide receiver scenario, this is where Fresno State's going to be coming into a big trouble.
Why is that?
You have so many untrained, untested players. You don't know what you're going to expect out of them, and it's not like you're not starting the season off easy. You know, you're starting against a quote-unquote perceived power five team who's decent, not great, maybe even subpar, but you're not going to beat a subpar team. So really the first two games are really going to be to test how much can these young guys contribute. And I would expect that Aaron Peck will be your number one wide receiver.
Yep.
So since we're moving on to receivers, this is where, like, Peck's back from his injury from year before. They have Jameer Jordan, Keyshawn Johnson, not that Keyshawn Johnson, but Damari Scott, Chad Olsen, tight end. They have a lot of players back, and this is where the quarterback plays huge. If we saw, like, if you look at what Utah State went through, and Hunter Sharp, who was a deep threat, That kind of went away when they're going from Craig Harrison, Daryl Gerritsen, to Kent Myers, back to Chucky Keaton, back to Myers, back to whoever. Those players can't have a good rhythm. So if they have a quarterback who, whoever they may be, most likely Chase and Virgil, that's what we're all assuming, this unit, with the returning talent that coming back, could be pretty good. While their catch rate is pretty terrible, about 50% for the most part. But if you have, that's partly due to playing with four quarterbacks last year.
Chris, you want to pick it up or should I?
Go ahead.
Personally, I think there is more talent in this group of receivers than on any other unit on the team. Mm-hmm. And I say that because, you know, even though the catch rates aren't pretty, you know, the yards per target aren't pretty, like you said, Jeremy, a lot of that is symptomatic of the quarterback situation that was going on last year. But, I mean, as a team, I had to go back and look this up. They had 92 catches by freshman receivers last year. There were only three teams on the FBS level that had more. Wow. So, yeah, and I mean, and these are guys that played all year long. They took their lumps. Now you're bringing back a guy who adds a dimension that they are really going to need in Aaron Peck. He's a big physical receiver who I've always had a lot of high hopes for. And, you know, again, I think if they can get the quarterback situation sorted out, he's a guy that could easily top 1,000 yards. You know, Jameer Jordan, you know, obviously Brett Rypien was the freshman of the year in the conference last year. But I mean, if I had a ballot and I had to fill out a top three, he would definitely be in it. You know, he's a guy that's shifty. He showed a lot of toughness, took a lot of big hits last year. But, you know, he made life miserable for a few opponents here and there. So while the numbers don't jump off the page, I definitely expect him to take a huge leap forward, too. And even the guys further down the depth chart are guys that could, you know, step up and be a huge factor. Delvon Hardaway, you know, I expect a lot from him to rebound now that he's 100% healthy. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll finally see a lot more action out of the tight end position. Because Chad Olsen is a weapon who was wasted in a lot of weeks last year.
Yes, he was.
But, I mean, if what I saw from the offense and the scrimmage this spring is any indication, you know, obviously you don't want to glean too much from it. But I, you know, I liked what I saw. They made a huge emphasis on getting him and the other tight ends the ball down the field, down the seams, which is something that was missing a lot last year.
Yeah, and they'll have, you're right, so many weapons. Like those 90-plus catches freshmen, 83 were from Jordan and Johnson last year. And
yeah.
And that's with rotating in guys out. If think of it this way, if their catch rate was about 60% between the two, that would have been 100 receptions for two guys, two freshmen. And you're right. This is the most talented part in the field, and we don't want to get to it. Maybe that's why some people are saying bowl game or close to that for Fresno. This could be one of the deeper units in the conference. You have UNLV, that'll be good. Nevada, we think, might be okay receiving-wise, maybe. But depth overall with young talent, this has to be it.
Yeah, I mean, even further down the depth chart, you know, I don't know if you guys are looking at Bill Connolly's thing, but even further down the depth chart, there are guys who could step in and contribute with like 15, 20 catches throughout the season. You know, Jordan Washington's a guy who could see some playing time this year. Anthony Grayson, you know, Michael Martins, who's a senior. And I mean, as far as Peck, I don't want to let this go before we move on. But, you know, the same thing I said about Tyler Stewart last time is something that applies to Aaron Peck as well. I think, you know, how he does this year, I think he's one of the most important players in the conference. You know, if he can step up and put, you know, put up the best numbers that he's put up and as a Bulldog, you're right. This team could, you know, threaten a lot of weeks.
I can see if he's that good, if it's stable. I guess I keep going QB. If it's stable, they'll be reasonably okay. And then the only other issue, we don't need to do too much on the offensive line, but I'm sure Chris is checking these numbers out. They lost a lot of talent last year on the offensive line. They don't have that many starts coming back.
That's debatable.
What? How is that debatable? Because it was so terrible.
No, you're talking. But no, I see where Matt.
Well, I mean, starts.
Well, starts doesn't necessarily mean.
They lost a lot of starts. Yes.
Yeah. Starts doesn't necessarily equivalent talent, but at that same time, you're going to have. Obviously, Aaron Mitchell is going to anchor this. Should anchor in terms of leadership. This offensive line, but you're going to have guys up there who have never started, which might be a concern. You're going to have guys up there who are now going to be juniors, possibly, who have never started and possibly never even played with program. I'm looking more down the line like Ryan Popolizio and Shane Gamma.
Whoa, Isaiah Trevino, man, 357.
And he better be
get him in. Get him in there.
Better be on the line. He better be in that, like. I don't know how much you know, but that's, he should be part of the starting five, I think.
Well, I mean, if I remember, I mean, size isn't everything. Let's just say that. I think as far as Popolizio and Gamma, I believe they were both JUCO transfers. So, you know, they'll definitely be in the mix for a role, if not necessarily a starting job. What I think will be interesting to watch is, you know, these are big dudes that they're getting on the line that they didn't necessarily have before, you know, especially at guards between Mitchell and Micah St. Andrew. You know, what's interesting to me is that, you know, I saw Virgil line up under center and they ran the ball. And I'm wondering how much we'll see that throughout the year if they just want to line up every so often and just keep punching opponents in the mouth by running right up the middle and carrying that tempo, you know, that's kind of spread offensive, you know, tempo, what that'll look like, because I don't think that's something that we've seen in DeRuiter's time here.
Well, that's where the new OC comes in, and that could be the reason why they want those big guys as well.
Here's my quick comment to your sizes and everything. Absolutely, sizes and everything. However, from a defensive perspective of the ball, you're trying to get around some guy who's 357 pounds. He might be slow, and he might be very slow to the punch, and you can get around him, but you still have to get around him. And any sort of split time that it takes quicker to get to the quarterback is more split seconds that Chasen Vigil or whoever else has time to throw.
Good point. Let me ask you this. You guys ever watch Hard Knocks last year with the Texans?
No.
Okay. Do you guys know who Vince Wolfork is in NFL?
Yes.
You see, yeah. You probably see this around, the big black guy wearing overalls. That's it. And maybe not.
Oh,
but
yeah,
people
I've seen
probably
that. Yeah,
hopefully
I've seen
know. Him. They've seen that guy wearing cowboy boots, messing around JJ Watt. Okay. JJ Watt, supreme athlete. Wolfork with the Patriots and now the Texans. Not to be rude, but he doesn't look like he's that muscular. He's just a giant of a dude. And he's not extremely athletic. He plays defensive line, so it's somewhat comparable here that I'm going to get to. It still takes – he can lean over and knock over a 280-pound, 300-pound lineman. It takes one guy and maybe another guy just to kind of chip him to get him off his route to not get the QB or tackler. And so, like what Chris is saying, if you have a huge guy like that – tenths of a second matter, and if this guy's wide and big and cuts a guy down by tenth of a second, 2/10, that's a big deal. But if you picture Vince Wolfork, he's not this specimen. He's just kind of not a blob, but he's not having a six pack or anything like that for a huge lineman. And I like it's just not everything. Maybe put these big guys at guards where you don't need to be athletic, but I think that's kind of it. Does make sense, but you also want. We don't know who their tackles are going to be. Their left and right tackle, they lost all conference. Alex Afid is gone. So that's one of the big replacements. But I don't know if it's going to be tackle, but that's kind of the story I had, where if you have a giant guy, just a little bit, that's all you need, man. Trip him. I don't know. Hip check him when he's coming around. Be a wider stance. It makes sense, but I want athletes too. I don't want just big guys who can't block or run downfield. Because we saw in the who was it when Utah played Alabama in the Fiesta Bowl? The offensive lineman just wore out after 5 seconds, after five plays in 20 seconds or something. You don't want that to happen when you're running so fast against them, either side of the ball. So, Games! Should we move to games, I guess, as I'm rambling?
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, thank you, Chris, for confidence. At Nebraska. They weren't very good, but they went to a bowl game. I would say about Nebraska, if you look at their schedule, they lost, I think, their a handful of their first half of games of the year on a last play. Like, they lost to BYU and to Hail Mary. They lost multiple games on the last play or last possession. So while they were not a good record, they're not a team that I don't think was a bad team overall.
Yeah, but I really, I don't, I'm unconvinced that Fresno State has the talent yet to compete with Nebraska.
I'm not saying that, but Nebraska's probably better than the record as well.
I'm seeing here there's a minus 20, Fresno will be a minus 20 projected margin from Bill C, and I feel like I have to agree with that.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
Matt,
far...
assuming it's a loss, what would you expect a positive outcome in that game if it's not going to be a victory?
I mean, to me, it's you don't go out and lose by like three or four touchdowns. I mean, it's I don't know how much you want me to say beyond that.
Well, no, that's fine. But, that I makes mean, sense. You want to be competitive.
Yeah, I mean, you have to hope that the offense especially can show some signs of life because, you know, if they go out on the very first series and they go three and out against that Nebraska defense and then the Cornhuskers go down and score a touchdown to go up 7-0, you know, what is that going to look like to the fans, to the team on the field? You know, are they going to be able to recover if the offense can't gain any traction, like, right away?
It's a good point, but one thing, too, this could be a game where, because Nebraska has Tommy Armstrong coming back for one more year, and he was the second passer in the Big Ten. But he also had 16 interceptions last year. And so this could be a game. He's reasonably mobile. This could be a where we want to see that secondary right away. If he's rolling out and making passes down the field, he throws over an interception per game, which is not very good. This could be a situation where a secondary needs to have a big game.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, he's kind of like a, you know, low efficiency, high reward kind of quarterback. And I remember 2 years ago when they came out to Fresno and he basically lit up the secondary. You know, I don't think he had to throw that many times, but he had a, you know, I remember he had a lot of big plays and it was over pretty early.
Yeah, he went right here, 12 of 21, 260 and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, so, you know, I think what I'm, so then I guess in that case, what I would look for in this game, what does the pass rush look like? Because if they can disrupt Tommy Armstrong just a little bit, force him to hurry some throws, you know, make him uncomfortable in the pocket, that's the kind of thing that I think could allow the Bulldogs to hang around and possibly pull an upset.
Yeah, I think you want them to, like I said, not get blown out and just do what UNLV did last year when they played good teams, Michigan, UCLA. Hang around for most of the game, and if you lose by 2 touchdowns, 17 points, don't get overly concerned, but you want to see them have bright spots, and you don't want every possession to go 10 plays, 15 plays for the defensive side. You want to be able to say, I made a stop here and there, and you want to see spurts, but I don't think there'll be enough spurts to do that.
Well, I mean, and I think to that end, they're ahead of where UNLV was last year because they don't have the depth questions that UNLV did last year. They've got like 6 or 7 guys who could rush the passer and bring him down. Whether that's going to happen or not, I don't know. But that's what I would look for.
All right, so Chris, is this going to be an extremely big blowout or what?
For Nebraska?
In their favor, yes.
I don't consider 3 touchdowns a completely large blowout. especially depending on how Fresno plays pretty much in the first half. So what I'm thinking is, I'm really thinking it is going to be a 21-point victory for Nebraska. I just don't think it's as bad as we perceive it.
So it could be like just kind of chip away, touchdown, field goal thing where it's just a slow, a gradual pull away, right? All right, so they'll win their next game. I'm assuming, wait, we shouldn't assume. Will they win their next opponent, Matt, versus FCS opponents?
Yes.
That, yes. Sorry, yes, had to bring it up. When you win three games last year, nothing's a given.
Yes.
Nothing is a given. So we don't need to go too deep into Toledo and Tulsa, but Toledo, what you need to know about them, new head coach. No, Matt Campbell's no longer there. He went to, what, Iowa State, I believe. New quarterback. Yes, they were double-digit wins last year. It's on the road, so it's going to be I'm not guaranteeing anything by any means, like we shouldn't, but if you look at last year, it's not going to be the same Toledo team, I would say.
I mean, yes and no. Obviously, they do lose Philip Eli, but they bring back the quarterback who was the starter before Philip Eli. You know, Logan Woodside, they have his 2014 numbers here, and he had 19 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, 62% completion percentage. So he's, maybe he's, not quite the dynamic passer that Eli was, but that's a guy who could make life miserable for a lot of opponents. And they have two guys as well who ran for over 900 yards last year. So, this is where the question of does the run defense improve? Can they get these guys off the field, Kareem Hunt and Terry Swanson? And this is another instance where I think it could be a more competitive game than a lot of people think.
Yeah, here's the thing is I've seen Toledo play various Mountain West teams over the past few years. I mean, Toledo was playing Boise State back in 2006, 2007. And they've always been a decent team, and they've always kind of been that upper tier group of five team. And I don't think Fresno State's at that level yet. I think this game is going to be close, but I think as a result of it being at Toledo, I can't picture Fresno getting the win.
I agree. Plus, their promotion for head coach was their OC, who's been there for about 6 or 7 years. So, assuming it's a QB's back, who's coming in to after not playing last year, their top two runners are back. This will be a game where I think we can learn a lot about Fresno State, how good or not good they'll be. I think it's a winnable game, but I don't think they'll be able to get it done just because of, Toledo has new coaching staff as well at the top. They're still, I think, more stable offensively to go against this Fresno defense. And then if we move to Tulsa.
Well, hold on, Matt. So do you think Toledo's a win or a loss?
Oh, yeah, I guess we have to do that.
I think it's competitive. I think it's a competitive loss.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they win, but I'm not going to expect it. So, if we go to Tulsa, they have Philip Montgomery as their head coach, former Baylor OC. Well, we'll see how that turns out, hopefully. Well, we're not going to get into that, but Tulsa's always known for slinging the ball around. He hasn't really turned them into Baylor like he wanted to. I think this similar to I think it's almost exact same as the Toledo game essentially. It's a team that you want to beat them. They're a okay team, but they're coming to town. This will be a game where their secondary for sure will be tested. Toledo probably not as much, but with what Tulsa's done historically, I'd have to say these guys have to pass rush whatever. Passing defense is going to be a big deal in this game for Fresno.
See, what's weird is that... Oh, no, go ahead, Chris. I was going to say, what's weird to me in looking up some of these numbers that Tulsa put up last year, they actually scored more points per game on the road than they did at home. They scored 35.5 points at home in 6 games on the road. Here on the road. So, to me, the question is, first of all, are they going to be able to hold Tulsa under 30 points? And if they can do that, are they going to be able to score more than 30 points on this Golden Hurricane defense? Because I think that's what it's going to take in order to win this game. because I think you're probably going to be in for a shootout one way or the other. So it's a question of, can you keep up on the passing game?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this game, if the secondary shows up, if they're being aggressive, if your defensive line is being aggressive and forcing the pass rush, I think that's where Fresno State can pull out the win. But at that point, I'm going to say this game is my question mark, because this game is based off whether or not Fresno State is going to make a bowl game or not. I know it's September 24th, but you'll see why in a little bit. So right now, just because I don't know what the defensive line is going to look like, I don't know what the secondary, how good or bad they're going to be. There's too many questions against a pass-heavy offense. I'm going to say that Fresno loses this by 3 points or less.
If you look at their quarterback, I agree, it's going to be a close one, but Dane Evans led the American 333 yards per game, 25 touchdowns, completes over 62% of his passes. But that's better than Paxton Lynch by quite a bit, outside of a few more interceptions when he was at Memphis. And they throw a ton. He threw almost 500 passes last year. And so, like I said, it's either pass rush has to make Evans get rid of the ball sooner or make him be uncomfortable, or the secondary has to get the pass breakups, great coverage. I think it'll come down to stopping Evans, but I don't think you can really stop him. And so I think he'll do what he normally does. Maybe Fresno make a play here or there, but unless they disrupt Evans enough, I don't think they'll get a win in this game. All right, so we get to this next set of the next game. We got UNLV here. Let me ask you this, Matt. Weather, is that going to be a deciding factor?
In Vegas? I hope not.
Well, last year's game, I'm just saying.
Yeah, they don't get any rain in Vegas, do they, Chris?
They do, and see, October's at the very end of monsoon season. But here's the thing. Like, rain in Vegas usually hits around late July to mid-August. But the weather in Las Vegas gets really freaking weird late September, early October.
We don't have a kick time for this yet, do we?
I don't think so.
Oh, yes, we do. 7:30 Pacific.
Let the weirdness continue.
All right. So, like, we don't need to go through these games. We're already an hour plus. But this, like Chris was saying, this first half schedule for him is more difficult. And I agree, because UNLV, they're a team where this is probably the outside of Sacramento State, the first game I could say, yeah, Fresno can win this game and not have too much reservations about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things I think will happen with this team this year is that because they're such a young team, I think there's going to be a lot of growing pains when they're on the road. And having to open conference play at UNLV, at Nevada, that's not going to be easy. And I think that, you know, they'll probably be competitive and they may struggle to get some traction, especially on offense on these road games. So while I don't think that there's going to be any blowouts on the schedule, I have them losing to UNLV, but I also have them beating Nevada.
Interesting. On the road. Yeah, that's
true.
You did as well. I don't recall it. I think I picked Nevada to win that game, but it's a tough stretch. Like, they go 10 weeks. They go at UNLV this game, at Nevada. I think we could both all assume San Diego State's a loss, and probably probably Utah State and Air Force.
That's how I have it, yeah.
Probably.
What about CSU? Because I've seen people say, like, 8-4, 9-3 for the Rams. I don't know. We'll look into them later, obviously, but I don't know what to make of CSU at this moment.
So here's where I said, or here's where I'm thinking that the last three games for Fresno State are, they're going to finish on a three-game win streak. Colorado State, Hawaii, San Jose State. I think all three games are winnable. I think despite being at Colorado State, I think it's going to come down to a field goal either way, and I think by then Fresno State is going to have everything clicking and rolling. And that's where, like I said, finishing on that three-game win streak, that's where that Tulsa game September 24th is just so important to kind of figure out.
Yeah, so, go ahead.
I was going to say, the optimist kind of looks at their game to close out last year and says that CSU got lucky to win that game because of some special teams breakdowns. You know, the pessimist kind of realizes that there's still a lot of young pieces on this team that are going to be developing throughout the year. So while Chris says that they should be clicking by the time they play in November, I'm a little less certain. You know, what I do know is that CSU is going to have a really good running game. And I think for a team that's looking to find the depth in their front seven, especially to kind of shore up their problems against the run game, you know, that posed a problem in their matchup last year. I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was Daylon Dawkins who ran for like 150 yards or something like that. But, you know, if they can't slow down that running game, they're going to have a lot of problems. And so while that's a game that I think they're going to lose.
It's all I can lean that way because it's week 10 straight weeks. At this point, we should know how good or bad their defensive front is. But they could also be worn down by injury or just general fatigue for week 10. And that's tough to build. And I think they'll beat Hawaii. I think San Jose State's also a toss-up game. So let's just do records. We've talked long enough about everything. We don't need to get into San Jose State and Hawaii. Listen to those shows when we get to them or have done them, depending on what order you're at. But those are winnable games. But so let's start with you, Chris. What's your projected record for the Fresno State Bulldogs?
5-7. So to recap, that's a 5-7 with wins. that's a 5-7 with wins against Sacramento State, Nevada, Colorado State, Hawaii, and San Jose State.
Okay, what about you, Matt? What's your lean?
I have them a 5-7-2, but the wins, I have my wins a little bit differently. I have wins against Sacramento State, Tulsa, at Nevada, Hawaii, and San Jose State. I think the talent is there to be pretty good at home, but I think there's going to be a learning curve for learning to win on the road.
I agree. I think, like, if they're going to make a bowl game, I think it's that first six games we really need to know. Because specifically Toledo and Tulsa, and I guess every game, Toledo, Tulsa, UNLV, and Nevada. That's three of the four on the road. They're probably going to win maybe just one of those, maybe two, if at most. And I got to go like, I can see it, but I don't think they're going bowl. Unless 5-7 gets into a bowl game, I might even go a little bit lower than you guys, because if you look at talent-wise, honestly, Sacramento State and Hawaii are the only two teams that are probably more talented than just on pure standpoint alone on that area. You're probably even with UNLV for the most part, and Nevada, not at San Diego State, not Utah State. I could see 3-9 again. I don't like it, but I think that's a possibility, beating Sacramento, beating Hawaii, and maybe, oh man, I don't want to say two wins. That's pretty low.
What do you think it is then, Jeremy?
I'm thinking about it. It's June. Come on. I'll go 4-8 because Tulsa, no, I'm going to go. I just is rambling and terrible, but I got to stick to, I'm going 2-10. I'm sorry. Sacramento and Hawaii, that's it. 2-10.
Are you kidding me? Wow.
There's a lot of folks aren't going to be happy about that.
Well, I don't think, here's the thing. No, I'm going to stick with it. 2-10 because the defensive front is very questionable. Toledo's, even though, as I said, Toledo's a new coach, new quarterback. new old quarterback, essentially. Tulsa slings the ball like crazy. Tulsa probably will be the best passing offense they face all year. They're not going to beat – I don't think they can beat Tulsa even at home. At UNLV, fine, I'll go 3-9. I'll go 3-9.
So then what's third win?
Oh, man. You really going to come back to that?
Yeah, we've done every podcast.
I will go at UNLV.
Okay. I think you actually said that UNLV was going to lose to Fresno State as well, if I remember correctly.
Hey, we're not going to predict exactly the records from other shows we've done. I'm just saying 3-9.
Excel sheet. Speak for yourself.
Oh, you do? You keep a track of all this?
Yeah.
Yes!
At least one of us is organized.
Are you kidding me? I mentioned it earlier. Matt has become the research guru of this podcast.
I've been writing down our wins and losses, but I haven't been comparing, because there was a big deal last year. Who was it with Fox? Where, Chris, you probably remember this, over Underdog complaining about Stu Mandel and Bruce Feldman not adding in the correct records or win loss in the Sun Belt or some other conference. I don't know. I don't think we need to be that strict here to say I chose in our UNLV show that Fresno is going to beat them or vice versa. It'd be nice, but I just think that's a game they could probably win. I could see them maybe beating Nevada, but I'm going 3-9, and I guess I'm the negative guy this season for Fresno. More negative, I guess.
Shocker.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me ask you one more question before we wrap it up. Is 5-7 getting them to a bowl game somehow?
No.
I have no idea. I'm not even going to try to answer that because I don't know anything about the APR stuff.
Yeah, you have to go down APR, and I feel that Fresno State's APR scores are probably not within the other higher up schools that don't do well academically, or rather well football wise as academics. Schools like Nebraska
if I remember correctly though, it's the highest that it's been in the 4 years that DeRuiter has been the head coach. I think it's 940 something for whatever what that means.
Well, that just means there's improvements being made and there's more of a stress on academics, which absolutely should be rewarded.
So do we want to talk about what we think the ceiling is like we have for the other teams?
Yes.
Of course. Should I start since I was negative at the beginning? Yes.
Yeah.
I think their ceiling is probably 6-6.
Really?
Just because I think so because here's the games I think I say about 3 wins. I would not be surprised if they beat San Jose State, if they beat Hawaii, if they beat Nevada, UNLV, or Toledo, then Sac State. Maybe Tulsa. I could maybe 7 wins, but I'd go 6 or 7 wins is my ceiling for them.
Chris, what about you?
I think, oh my goodness. I think 8-4 is their ceiling. And I think that's saying Nebraska, San Diego State, Utah State, and Air Force will probably be, I don't want to say guaranteed losses, but they're going to be strong losses or strong potentials of losses. That being said, I could see 9-3 with an eked out win over Air Force. I'm just not that confident to say it yet.
Would I be too much of a homer if I said that the ceiling for this team is the division title?
No.
Because to me, the big question is, can the offense, can it at least get back to where it was in 2014? Because obviously that year they had some clunkers. Everybody remembers the Hawaii Bowl. Everybody remembers how they kind of fell flat against Wyoming, things like that. But at least there were instances where they could score points. You know what I mean? And, too often last year, the offense looked totally lifeless. And I think, fans around here would beg for that kind of erratic performance from week to week. But if it shows up on the right weeks, this is a team that I think has the potential to drop 30 on just about anybody. So I'm kind of with Chris in kind of the 8-4, 9-3 range, where I think if things come together the way that I think they can, if they get the quarterback situation settled, you know, if they find a couple of running backs to take the load off of Chase and Virgil, if Aaron Peck becomes the dynamic playmaker I've always thought he could be, this is a team that I think could even beat San Diego State. Do I think it's going to happen? Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not. But I'm not going to say it's out of the question if things come together quicker than I think they will.
No, I can totally see that. I can totally see that. And that's why I say you're absolutely reasonable by thinking the division title could be the ceiling for this team.
The offense doesn't need to be great to get back to a bowl. The offense just needs to be fine.
No, that's fair. You had a lot of ifs in those comments there. If they do this,
well, that's what I'm saying. That's where the ceiling is.
And that's why I'm kind of going to the other end. Like you were last year, were kind of like you didn't expect too much. You couldn't predict all those injuries, but you weren't too high in this team overall. And you're right. So it's hard for me to go too many games difference from what you're saying about this team. You follow more closely than any of us right now. So it's tough for me to go with 2 or 3 wins where the over-under is 3.5 right now, and you're going at 5 or 6.
Yeah, but so, Bill C's projection is 5.8, so...
I'm against the grain, I guess.
I mean, I don't think it's possible for them to be any worse than they were last year.
I'm sorry.
I mean, that's a good point. A lot of those young guys, they have a year of experience under their belt now. So if they can answer those critical questions at those critical positions, this is a team that could surprise a lot of people, I think.
I think they could. I want to see it, I guess. I guess I'm not a believer right now of what's going on. So
I mean, that's a fair argument. I think, you know, the target for me is not necessarily this year. I think what everybody's looking forward to more is next year when these sophomores like Jordan and Virgil are, you know, juniors who have had a couple of seasons of production and they challenge San Diego State for that division title in 2017.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And the defense will have more depth and more experience offensive line as well. So, all right, so I think we've talked enough Fresno State. So next week, I'm going to make a decision now. San Jose State is our next week's show. So study up on Kenny Potter and a Billy Freeman there.
Yeah, because the only people that's left is San Jose State and San Diego State.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we're saving the best for last, like for the Aztecs, I'm assuming. So I hope everybody enjoyed this almost 90 minutes podcast here. Whew, that's a long time. But check us out, mwcconnection.com. If you want to find us on Twitter, at Jeremy Moss, Greek Padre, and MattK_FS. Is that right still?
Yes, it is.
Nailed it. Good. I always forget the underscore. I'm like questioning myself. So give them some more followers. They do some good stuff. Check out our site. Leave us a review. iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher. 5 stars, but give us the truth. I looked at our reviews the other day on iTunes. We have about 5 reviews. They're all 5 stars, which is great, but only 5 reviews. So help us get the word out. And also, we're making a playlist. So if you listen to this Fresno State show, you want to know about UNLV or Nevada, they're all listed on the playlist on the show if you find it here. Simple to find. So we'll keep these rolling. San Jose State is our next show. And we'll check everybody next time to talk about the Spartans.
What you want, we've got a mind to hard to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voices about the games, and you know we talk about the latest goings more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, will you listen to this podcast too? And you rant about this podcast too. Just a side where Jeremy and Liz. some matches and kiss me in the britches. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Esty, they're calling out our name. Where will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you love it.